programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Mark Nepo, author of The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart. And Mark, there was a theme that I felt like I could hear throughout your book, and that is that we are actually in kinship with all things. We feel so individualized. We feel so even isolated in these times. And you are constantly reminding us that we actually are in kinship with with others.
Yeah, and it's not by accident that kindness and kinship share the same root. And one of the rewards for kindness is not just that you will think well of me or that we will develop a better relationship, but that kindness, the act of kindness, allows us to experience oneness. The act of kindness allows us to experience the connection with all things, which in turn empowers us, and then we're able to continue to be strong and kind further. So kindness leads to kinship, and there is a kinship between all things that we understandably come in and out of being aware of, because pain, worry, fear, betrayal, all the difficulties of life short circuit our full attention. And as we mentioned earlier, this is why it's important that every person develop their own practice of return. Because the way that pain and fear introduce themselves is by cutting our attention, by making everything about them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the miracle hasn't stopped happening.
You know? I kind of think of it like we go into a cocoon and the mirror is on the inside of the cocoon, and all we see is ourself and our pain.
Yes. And again, not to be harsh on ourselves, because the initial introduction of pain and fear is all-encompassing.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example that, you know, I'm walking on a hike on a beautiful day like today, and I'm not watching where I'm going, and I really stub my toe on a boulder, you know, the kind where you think you might have broken your toe.
Ooh.
And, you know, when that happens, immediately all of life is the pain in that toe. The sun hasn't stopped shining. The view hasn't ceased to be. The miracle of life hasn't stopped. Now, over time, maybe within a half hour, it stops being that all-encompassing and it starts to throb. And now you have the continual choice point for all of us, okay? Because now the miracle of the day is still there. And so is the pain in the toe. Where do we put our attention? Not, we can't avoid, it's not as simple. You know, Stoicism says, ignore the pain in the toe. Well, we know that doesn't work, because the more you ignore what you feel, the larger it gets. But you can't drown in it either. And one of the things that I'm discovering over time through my own ailments and through the things I've been forced to work with is that letting the miracle of life back in is actually part of the medicine that right sizes the pain, whatever it is. So you can replace the pain in the toe with anything: heartache, loss of purpose, worry, desperation, fear, whatever it might be. How do we let the miracle of life and the kinship of all things come back in to right size the difficulty we've been given as a human being? It cannot eliminate it. Part of the journey of being human is the friction of life. No one is exempt from it. But I believe that life has been made just difficult enough that we need each other. And this is to ensure the journey of love. And just as nature is eroded to reveal its inner beauty, we are given the friction of life, which we call suffering. I imagine that if trees and mountains and shores could talk, they might call the elements suffering.
Oh, because they're wearing them away.
Right.
At least a mountain.
But
yeah, right.
We are worn to our beauty if we can hold each other up to it. And so it's really important, this dance, this personal practice of how do we not drown in our pain, and how do we not ignore our pain, and how do we, you know, often what we do, and I've done it too, is like, well, if I can just get through this pain, then I can return to the light of the day.
Right.
No, it's letting the light of the day in will help right-size the pain.
You know, I'm thinking, all right, we stub our toe, and then that might be an example. We go into regret, like, oh, I should have paid more attention. A lot of times we hold regret, and you have a wonderful metaphor that you use for regret that it just really popped for me. It's about the ringing,
bell.
The bell.
Yeah.
Give this metaphor.
Well, regret, and again, this all of this requires self-compassion, because we shouldn't blame ourselves. Regret is a form of blaming yourself, and then you shouldn't blame yourself for having regret.
Right.
You know, it's about course correction. We all do this, and then how do we return to a place of kinship to all things for the health that it brings us? Well, having regret is like ringing a bell and then trying to gather the sound of the bell in the field and put it back under the bell. I mean, it's impossible.
So you're chasing. It's
impossible.
I love
and
that.
The word regret, one of the meanings is to re-greet. So yes, it's a way to look at what we've done or not done, but all with the aim of doing it differently the next time. We, in our pain and our self-blame and our low self-esteem, we look at regret often as, could I just go back and redo that? Oh, I wish I could redo that. Why didn't I do this better? What was I thinking? What was wrong with me? And of course, that's a pain all by itself. That self-recrimination is a terrible pain that keeps us from regaining our kinship with the oneness of things. And the whole reason to feel that kinship, it's like when a surfer catches a wave. Well, for the time that they're riding that wave, the surfer and the wave are one. And no wave lasts forever. But the surfer paddles and expresses effort to catch the wave. And then when the wave ends, they paddle and go back either to catch another wave or back to shore. This is the relationship which this book really explores, is the relationship between effort and grace.
I was just going to say, that sounds like what you describe as grace.
Yes.
That and you can't... you can't win grace or make it happen.
No. And grace, you know, very simply, I would define grace as beyond religious terms, underneath religious terms. It's grace is what allows a bird to glide. Grace is the current that carries a fish after it works so hard to find the current. And in human beings, grace is when all of our effort leads us until the as the Taoists say, the way, the unseeable current of life carries us. And great love and great suffering, when we give ourselves over, when we go back to our earlier conversation, and we don't shut down the sun of our soul, the sun of our heart, and we let it emanate in all directions with light and warmth, with no preference, then we have our best chance, like that fish, of catching the wave, of being carried by the current. And all the spiritual traditions speak about health as the alignment of the part or the person with the whole, W-H-O-L-E. And dis-ease is when we are out of alignment.
I love that thought of the fish finding the current. You know, we're like, we swim against the current and we're just trying to control our lives. And then that moment, when I read that, I go, oh, right. You surrender and you are carried by the current. And that's the grace you're talking about.
That's the grace. And now, but it requires a mix of effort. I think effort readies us for grace.
Yes.
I would also suggest that effort is revelation in slow motion.
As effort is revelation in slow motion. Okay. All right. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I was thinking like in controlling life, and I'm thinking now in the context of fear, we fear like, oh, the future, what might happen? And you really faced one of those big fears when you were working in a place for 16 years, and then suddenly, boom, like that, you were out, and some other people were out with you, but it just like...
Yeah. So this was, you know, from the time when I went through my cancer experience, almost died in my 30s, you know, this was when I was 59, so many years later, I experienced another constellation of difficulty that was probably the greatest since then. And it was a great teacher, as difficult as it was, because I was laid off, fired, a job was gone, that I had a community that I had been a part of for 16 years. And I was sick at the time. I had, because of the chemo I had many years ago, a stomach flu my stomach didn't recover from a severe stomach flu. And so my stomach became like a backed up sink. I couldn't eat very much. And it was unclear. It took 7 months to recover, and it might not have. There are people who unbelievably live with this, these poor people, as a chronic condition. So, you know, once I lost the job, I had a fear of the future because I wasn't even sure if I would still have health insurance, let alone be able, I was sick. I wasn't able to do what I do. The condition I had physically, people who have that condition develop a fear of eating because you don't know what's going to cause pain. One bite, four bites, two bites, it changes every day. So there's a fear of the present. And at the same time as this happened, my father had turned 90 and I was going to see him for the first time in 15 years. And as much as I wanted to see him, I had a fear of the past. I didn't know what going back into that tangle of where I grew up, what it would do to my personality, to my identity, to my personhood. So I was really entangled in overlaying fears, and it was pretty clear I ran out of tenses. There we were, past, present, future.
Right.
And so very much as we were talking about Adai, so very much there I was, not through any wisdom on my part. I didn't have anybody asking me Adai at the time. But there was nowhere to go except to stand exactly where I was.
So I want you to go more in detail with that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Mark Nepo. He's the author of The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Mark Nepo. He's poet, philosopher, and teacher, and author of The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart. And we're talking about fear, fear of the present, fear of the past, fear of the future. So, what's helpful is stillness.
Well, here. And again, you know, I was exhausted to it. I didn't choose it out of wisdom or out of courage or, you know, I was in a situation, as I mentioned, where I was afraid of the past. I was afraid of going to see my father after so much time. I was afraid of the present because I had a stomach condition that was painful to eat. And I had lost my job, so I was afraid of the future. I didn't even know if we'd have health insurance. And so there was nowhere to turn. There was nowhere to run. Sometimes when we're afraid of one, we run to the next. You know, if we're afraid of the past, we run to the future. You know, but here I was, and there was nowhere to go except where I was. And so, exhausted and afraid, I had to stand on the one solid inch that was below me with nowhere to go except to wait until that inch grew to 2 solid inches, until it grew to 3, until I could find a new way forward, having not moved at all. And so the stillness, which I would translate as accepting the truth of things as they are, when we're powerless, the greatest power we have is to admit what is. Is to admit what is. And from there, we're born anew. And from there, I could discover the kinship of all things again. It didn't remove my pain. It didn't remove that I had to face and go be with my father, but trust that who I had become through all these years would survive that coming together. And it didn't remove the uncertainty about the future without a job, but it put all of these things in a different context because I could now view them from the authority of my being, which was not my authority, but it was the authority that came from the authority of all being. So if you imagine a mountain, you see a mountain, you know, from a distance, it's hard to tell where the mountain, the base of the mountain, where the mountain stops and the earth begins. You can't tell. Well, it's the same thing with every soul. Every soul is like a mountain, and when you look, go into it deeply, you can't tell where the individual soul stops and the ground of all souls begins. And so when we talk about authority of being, it's when I can be completely who I am, I touch into the authority of all being, the way a mountain touches into the earth. And then I am on solid ground, and then I am in kinship with all being. So let me share a very poignant and powerful story from the end of my father's life. You know, I was visiting my father and he was in the hospital. And like many people, I wound up unexpectedly feeding my father. He was in the hospital bed and he'd had several strokes and was very weak. And I was feeding him applesauce. And it was beautiful and it was heartbreaking and it was everything. And I became so completely present and devoted that all of life was getting that spoon into his mouth so it wouldn't disturb or hit his teeth or disturb his breathing. And we just did this over and over together, and he reached a little and I would bring the spoon out. And to my surprise, underneath all that feeling, all that poignancy, all that pain and sadness and beauty and sweetness, all of a sudden, we were in a moment of wonder. We were in a moment of wonder. So the way a drop of rain, when it hits the lake, ripples in all directions, but where the drop hits, it clears a little teeny dot of clarity. My father and I, by facing what was ours to face, by feeding him, by giving myself over and not running and feeling it to the depth of all I had to feel, we were that dot of clarity, and it was a moment of wonder. And to my surprise, when I could inhabit what was mine as deeply as possible to the bottom of my personality, I suddenly went into the well of all personality. And now I was in the moment of every child that ever fed a dying parent, and I wasn't alone. We were all through time, through the mystery of time and timelessness, through feeling what was mine to feel. Completely, I discovered where resilience lives. And resilience, I've come to understand through that, is where feeling what is mine to feel to the depth of all that I have, where it meets all of humanity, that's where resilience releases itself.
I'm thinking after, I think it was after he died, there was this kind of odd moment that, and many of us have gone through this, when the death of our parent or loved one, that you were at the same time getting an award for a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking of like how this presence that you're talking about and the absence, you know, they live side by side, the joy and the sorrow. I mean, you're going on with your life and you're receiving this award and your father is dying and the man across the way in the restaurant is homeless and he's mm-hmm. going through the garbage bin very carefully,
yeah,
like some
yeah.
Rembrandt painting. I mean, I'm repeating some of the words
yes.
in your book here.
Yeah.
So I'm just so moved by that life is such a...
life is an incredible tapestry.
Tapestry.
That is never finished, that is weaving us. We are the threads in that tapestry. And when we can open, you know, so we talked earlier that, you know, going through life, we are taught to navigate the outer world, and which is a wonderful skill. We need to sort and choose and prioritize and problem solve. That's helpful. It's helpful to know that we took the right turns to get here so we could meet you to do this interview, you know. But in the things that matter, what life has taught me is that I need to open my heart and absorb and integrate. And then the heart releases its own logic. Then the heart releases its own logic. And that we are constantly asked to let everything in and not choose between it or make logical sense of it, but to let it reverberate until it tells us, till it becomes that teacher, that upaguru, the teacher that is next to you at this moment.
What does it take to have it teach us?
I think it takes being open and without conclusion. And this is very important for the times we're in, because we live in a time that where there is a worldwide epidemic of fundamentalism. It's not just in religious traditions. I believe, which I talked about in my last book, that there is what we can call a personal fundamentalism, where we allow what is familiar to have primacy over everything else we encounter because we think it's safe. And so we push away anything that's different, when in fact, we need everything that is not us to be whole. Plato said, we are born whole, W-H-O-L-E, but we need each other to be complete. And, you know, in the Jewish tradition, God is known as an indwelling presence, which is not revealed except through relationship.
Relationship.
So I need...
In conversation.
So paradoxically, I need to become a clear vessel, which means I need to become who I am, individuate, become solid, become my own person, not so I can just stay contained, so that I can open up to everything that is not me.
And so there's a teacher in there somewhere.
Yes. Yes, the teacher is that we have to become who we are so we can lose who we are.
Oh, so paradoxical.
We need to become who we are so we can lose who we are. Not lose who we are as in terms of vanish, but lose who we are so that we can let everything in. I have a friend who loves jazz, cries at jazz, cry. And I sit with him and listen to jazz so that I can watch him listen to jazz because it's so moving to watch him cry when he hears Miles Davis or John Coltrane. And so we were talking and he said, you know, sometimes it scares me because he wouldn't, while he loves jazz, we wouldn't have a conversation quite like this. You know, it's not the way he talks. So, but he said, you know, sometimes it scares me because when I listen to jazz, I get so swept up in it that I'm afraid when I come back, I won't be the same. And I took his hand and I said, but isn't that the point? Isn't that the point to develop a self that is an instrument that is so attuned that you can hear jazz so that you can feel it so deeply, so that it will change you.
So you're very porous to it.
So the idea is to have a solid foundation, but porous boundaries.
Oh, Mark, I want to thank you so much. We could just go on and on. This is so wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us
welcome.
Today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a joy.
I've been speaking with Mark Nepo, poet, philosopher, and spiritual teacher. He is the author of his newest book, The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, marknepo.com. Nepo, N-E-P-O. MarkNepo.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3590.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Karan Bajaj, author of The Yoga of Max's Discontent. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how to live a creative life in a material world.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
Radio Rewind.